Today, I'm talking to Lloyd Ernst. He is the founder and CEO of CloudStaff Modern Workforce. Whenever I talk to Lloyd, I get super inspired and motivated about the industry that we're in. I'm always impressed by Lloyd's vision of today and the future of employment. He is proactively moving the workforce, the modern workforce, into the cloud. CloudStaff has been in the news a lot lately because they recently raised $20 million from Navigar. This is a huge amount for the BPO and outsourcing industry, and I'm really excited to see where CloudStaff go with this growth capital that they've raised. So I'm really excited to have this conversation with Lloyd today. I really enjoyed it, learned a lot, and I'm sure you will too. If you want any of the show notes, go to outsourceaccelerator.com/podcast. So I started my conversation with Lloyd asking him how CloudStaff had coped and adjusted to the coronavirus outbreak.
Look, I think we've done extremely well, and I think most of the industry has demonstrated its resilience to being able to change models fairly quickly. I think we made the call to move to a work from home model, and it'd been something that we had done some planning for, and like most BPOs, we had contingency plans for earthquakes and flooding and volcanoes, but no one had quite had a plan for a global pandemic, which requires the shutdown of all offices. So we certainly had to make some changes to it. But we'd already been deploying more laptops around the staff and those sorts of things as well. So I think we made the call to move to a work from home model on a sort of Sunday night, and I think we had 94% of staff operational in about 24 hours. So we're pretty happy with that. I think the local SM Mall did lose a few shopping carts as people were pushing their PCs and monitors and everything home, but I think they've all come back now.
That's an incredible feat, isn't it? Because you've got thousands of staff there, haven't you? How many seats have you got now?
We've got over 2,500. And again, most of our customers do tend to be small to medium enterprise. So unlike the sort of the larger call centers where they might have 300 or 400 people working for a single account, we have 400 or 500 smaller accounts with anything from 5 to 50 staff working for those accounts. So we're a slightly different model.
And as you mentioned, business continuity planning, the Philippine BPO industry certainly is pretty advanced in terms of being aware of having, backups, redundancies, plans in case there's earthquakes, which there are quite a lot of, and floods and typhoons. But this really, the kind of blindsided not only the Philippines, but the whole world. What do you think we've learnt from this in terms of the relationship to business continuity and, I suppose, the reliance on offices and things like that?
Look, I think this is going to be, as everyone's talking about, the new norm. It is something which is not going to go away. And one of the things we need to realize is how do we deal with the issues of staff having to work from different areas, whether it's from home or from the office? How do we deal with the security aspects? How do we deal with the internet and all the other issues that go together with this? So we think this actually is probably going to be more of part of the ongoing mix. It's not like we're going to flick a switch and everything's going to go back to normal. This is the new normal.
And so let's go back a little bit, Lloyd, and if we can get you to introduce yourself. Just recently, CloudStaff has been in the headlines. You have raised a Series B for $20 million. Now, in Silicon Valley, people could probably blow that over an expensive lunch, but in the Philippines and in the BPO industry, that's a really significant investment. The investment was made by Navigar, who are veterans in the BPO industry and had a very successful exit from TaskUs. So you're certainly, in a great, environment there. I suppose just initially start by introducing CloudStaff and the origins of CloudStaff in respect to your own professional experience.
So where CloudStaff came from is I had a couple of, so I started my history working with Apple resellers and Microsoft in Australia, and then started a business in Brisbane, which was an ISP called PowerUp, and grew that with two other partners to the largest ISP in Queensland, and sold that to Malcolm Turnbull and the guys from Aussie Mail, and then started a web hosting business called Web Central, and we grew that to the third largest web hosting company in the globe, and then we sold that to Malcolm Turnbull and the guys. So after we exited Web Central, I was really keen to explore Asia, and we'd done some work up in China and Hong Kong and Japan, and so and I was really keen to look at the offshoring of software development resources, because one of the big problems I had is every board meeting, you know, at Web Central, I'd have the board sitting there looking at my 8 billing developers and going, when's this project going to end? Because, you know, the developers were earning like $120,000 a year, and this was back quite a while ago. And so every board meeting was like, there's $1 million that can go straight to the bottom line, those sorts of things. And so after Web Central, I moved up to China and started doing software development in Beijing and Xi'an. And we built 2 centers there. And that actually worked fairly successfully. The quality of the talent was great, you know, Tsinghua University, those sorts of things. In about 2009, we needed to do some software QA testing. And I had a friend who was working for the World Bank, and he said, look, you should think about the Philippines. And so in 2009, we ran a pilot down here at Clark, and hired 7 software QA testers, and it went really well. And from that point, we then started to see things gravitate, mainly due to, you know, the language, the English, and the ease of use in doing business down here in the Philippines.
And CloudStaff is, you know, you're obviously a highly entrepreneurial, highly sort of technically technology focused kind of entrepreneur. And CloudStaff is really combining not just staff augmentation, not just human resources, but really the sort of technological interface with that. Is that right? What is your sort of special spin on
We call it our secret sauce, and it's really about technology and people, and it brings the two together. And look, you know, I'm an absolute fan of technology. Technology gives us ability to grow and scale and produce a reproducible product for customers and help customers be able to manage the workforce, etc. But then, you know, you also need to bring in the people element as well. And one of the interesting things is with our customers is, you know, that people component is just so really important. You know, if you're a large global e-commerce player, and, you know, you've got processes, you've got everything defined down to the nth degrees, you've got more Six Sigma sort of black belts than you do other people, and so you get a lot of process. And as I said, you know, we're very, very different. Our customers have different requirements, so we've had to use the technology to be able to provide small to medium enterprises the same sort of tool set that, you know, the big guys would use.
Yeah, and it is, it's about getting enterprise level facilities, really, isn't it, into the SME space. And I think that the, you know, the incredible thing about the outsourcing industry, sort of about 10 years ago, it was only accessible to the big enterprise and the multinationals. And now the whole world has opened up to outsourcing for SMEs.
Absolutely. And Derek, you know, one of the things that's been really interesting, it's been this move to the cloud. So when we first went to China, and I thought, oh, let's try to do some outsourcing in China for SMEs. Let's do some data entry work and some things like that. And you know what? It just didn't work. You know, the technology just wasn't there. The customers had everything on premises, and you had to use an ADSL connection with a VPN, and everything then went through to a file server. And, you know, it just did not work. Then all of a sudden, the move to the cloud has changed that. So this technology barrier has now disappeared. And I guess a whole lot of businesses took those on-premise servers they had in their small to medium enterprises, and they've moved them to the cloud. You know, they've taken their Microsoft Exchange, and it's now become Office 365. They've moved their file server to Google Docs. They've moved their ACT contact management to Salesforce. Their accounting to Xero, MYOB, and those sorts of things. So this move to the cloud from SMEs was done because I don't want to have to manage the server. I don't want to have to manage the air conditioning, the backup tapes, and the power supply. And they've moved to the cloud because it made economic sense. It made it easier. And then at the same time, it's meant that staff don't need to be in the office, and that barrier has actually disappeared.
And by cloud, you're also inferring that, you know, these things, when servers are in the cloud, it's a done-for-you product, and it's a subscription product. It removes a lot of the hassle of actually having to manage the minutiae yourself. And it's the same with staffing, really, isn't it? You know, things are becoming globalized, but also the hassle is being removed so that it can just focus on the core activities.
Absolutely. And, you know, one of the fundamental beliefs that we see in the next 5 years with businesses is businesses are going to get smaller. And if you've got 500 staff today, in the future, you might only have 300 staff, but you'll have an additional 400, which will be the gig economy, the outsourced offshore BPO cloud staff augmented workforce. And I think the reason that you're going to see that is because businesses, it's expensive to manage people. It's expensive to manage the culture aspect and those sorts of things. And so businesses will keep needing to refine their focus who are the people that are the key drivers of value inside that business, and they'll focus their energy and time on it. And if anything, COVID's just brought that forward. Why would you the global business community has just had a lesson on, working from home or working remotely or working from the cloud. So, all the security issues they've had to deal with to make it work for their staff, well, guess what? You can now flip a switch and have staff at cloud staff. So, we're pretty excited with what this new view on how cloud-based employees are going to be engaged.
I think it's been an incredible lesson for a lot of people, this coronavirus. I mean, if there's any silver lining to it, it's sort of pushed the entire world and a lot of maybe older school economies and businesses into the online realm. And, a lot of people have maybe been pushed kicking and screaming into it. But now, everyone's had a crash course in Zoom. Everyone are probably using a lot more online tools. And people are sort of realizing that offices aren't necessarily so essential. And I suppose, it's a saving grace that coronavirus happened now and not 10 or 15 years ago, because as you say, I think everything would have stopped.
There weren't
the available tools and there weren't the familiarity with it. So
yeah.
It's kind of highlighted I think that the world is maybe ready for more of remote and cloud work and employment. And as you say, everything's being redefined. Because employment is being redefined. What does it mean to have employees? And also, where are they working from? Do you need your own offices? Where do you see this shift? What do you think people are, what are the changing practices during coronavirus? And what do you think will stick? And then what do you think will sort of reflect back to old behaviors?
So one of the interesting challenges that I think it's brought forward is, how do you measure the output from the staff that are kind of working remotely? How do we monitor them? How do you keep the people engaged? That's another big challenge. Professional loneliness. Everyone's sitting at home, with their kids and their dog and their cat. And missing that, gathering around the water fountain. So I think there's some of the issues that people have had to start to think about addressing. You can use pieces of technology to look at how do we address the monitoring and the output and the metrics and those sort of things. So, we've had to roll out some additional tools for our customers. I think security is also a huge issue that also needs, again, it's getting attention, but it needs more attention. Then there's that cultural impact about how do you keep a whole lot of people who, are not coming into the office engaged and feel like they're part of that the same company culture and community. So I think they're some of the things that, we've seen change. So we've had to use more of the tools with regards to social engagement with the staff. You know, we've been doing a lot more virtual beer sessions with the staff, grabbing them and sort of having a chat. And you know, you can't have a beer, so you've got to send out some virtual beers and dream points and some whole lot of things like that. And at the same time, measure the engagement as we measure other forms metrics as well.
It's quite worrying from my perspective. You know, like, people have had a month at home and they're saying, look, I don't ever want to go back to the office. We don't need offices anymore. Let's get rid of all of it. And, you know, this is a very short test period. You don't know the implications of operations if people work from home forever. And, you know, I sort of fear for the young graduates that are 22 to 25 years of age. And if they don't start in an office, they don't get the discipline of turning up to an office and learning from older peers, then potentially this sort of organizational experiment that we're all going into now could end very badly in 10 years from now. And I think people need to be careful that to, you know, dissect whether this whole working from home thing is as effective as they think, or maybe it's just a fad versus the trend for the future.
Absolutely, and I think different businesses, you know, will address this differently. And a key element is going to have to be continue to monitor it. I mean, it was fun for the first month, and the second month everyone started to get a bit long in the tooth. And then, absolutely, you know, I think there are that cultural implications of people who actually, you know, who we do need to get back into the office to get that social networking happening and just improve the communications. I also think there's probably going to be blended models that come out. You know, where we can we'll have staff, you know, working from home one week, office the next week, those sorts of things. So there's definitely going to have to be a reconfiguration of how we look at spaces and those sorts of things. And especially, you know, and I think as businesses evolve as well, you know, with the offshore models, you know, because if you're starting off trying to work everything from remotely from home with everyone sitting in their own PC, that's really, really hard. And I do think that, you know, you're not going to replace the need for people to come in and work in the office and you know, share that coffee around the coffee table, etc.
And what are your personal views on productivity management tools and you know, I suppose those kind of spying tools? There's a lot of softwares out there. You know, there's one end of the spectrum is, you know, it's all about culture and trust, and the other end of the spectrum is you sort of monitor and record everything for optimal efficiency. Maybe, you know, you're completely agnostic and it depends on the clients, but where is that balance do you see to get sort of optimal output?
Look, I think you've got to start with metrics. What are you actually monitoring? You know, what are you looking for the output? And you know, if the staff are delivering those outputs, then that's fine. You know, you don't need to go and resort to some of the other spyware tools and those sort of things, which many Western companies do feel uncomfortable with, which seem to be a little bit more of the norm and those sorts of things. But I think it really is dependent upon, you know, where the businesses are. It's also the maturity with regards to their staff as well, as how you measure that. But, you know, everyone needs to be providing at least some basic metrics that you can monitor on a daily basis, and then you address it that way. That said, you know, we have customers who are at both ends of the spectrums, and also as they sort of evolve, customers will come along using some of the tools. Sometimes it's not spying. Sometimes it's just, you know, trying to understand what are the staff doing? Why is that process taking 3 hours when it should really take, you know, 15 minutes? And why are they clicking on this? And it's also not just monitoring the processes, it's monitoring all the technology that sits behind there, especially in the Philippines. You know, when staff have internet problems and power problems, they don't always put their hand up and say, hey, I've got issues, because, you know, they're concerned that the customer might terminate them or drop them from the account. And so, you know, we've had to build some of those tools ourselves so that we can get the data and the insights as to how the staff are put together there.
I've been lucky enough to visit and tour around some of your main facilities, and, you know, they're incredible. You know, there's ping pong tables, there's entertainment areas, and sort of the central hub looks a little bit like a space station, how you sort of monitor all of the uptime and the connectivity and things like that. Incredible facilities. Now, you know, we are, I think, with coronavirus, exploring moving away from the dependency of facilities. And for a long time, I think BPOs have been defined by their facilities. What do you sort of see as the essence of what outsourcing and cloud staffing really provide the clients and also the staff that then execute the roles? Like, where is the essence and the value add that you can add to clients? This podcast is brought to you by Outsource Accelerator. We are the world's leading outsourcing marketplace and advisory. We help big and small businesses with their outsourcing needs, and we can help you too. We cover everything from business and staffing strategy, optimal outsourcing structures, implementations, and fully managed services. If you're already outsourcing, about to start, or somewhere in between, then we can ensure that you get the best from outsourcing. That's the best prices, best terms, and of course, the best results from your outsourcing practices. We list over 700 outsourcing suppliers on our website, host this leading outsourcing podcast, and have over 5,000 pages of content. Because we span the entire market, we can ensure that you get the best deal possible. We offer everything from light brokerage, co-managed services, through to fully managed solutions. Get in touch today. Visit us at outsourceaccelerator.com/quote. Mention that you're a podcast listener, and we will give you special attention plus a 10% discount. This is for a limited time only. Go to outsourceaccelerator.com/quote.
The facilities are just one part of that, and I think you will see is more flexibility with regards to not so much hot desking, but more temporary suites, those sort of things, which can be available on a daily or weekly basis. The ability for staff to be able to book those sort of facilities when they're required. So the facility aspect is still just one part of that. I think also this whole overall view of monitoring the metrics and not just what the people are putting out, but how well is the PC working at home, those sorts of things, and how do you address security as well? Is the PC using genuine Windows and genuine applications and those sorts of things? So it's got to be there's got to be a fairly broad approach to making this work. It's not just one little piece in isolation. It's about getting that whole picture together.
And digging down a little bit into, what cloud staff is, do you have specialized sectors? Do you have niches? You say that you sort of mainly work with the sort of SME market with smaller teams. Where do you specialize and where is your sweet spot?
It's just amazing. Our customers are all across the board. We've got dentists and doctors' surgeries. We've got construction companies, startups, fitness companies. We used to have a few cruise companies too, and those sorts of things. It's just all across the board. It really does. Not only do we have a diverse variety of customers across different industries, and I would certainly say we don't specialize in one particular industry. And then you find what the staff are actually doing. We'll have a customer might go through and have accountants or tech support guys working for them. And so we find at cloud staff, our customers will come along and generally start in one area. They might start with accounting or bookkeeping or something like that. And then they might go, hey, this is actually working. We've got the technology working. We can chat to Jane. The email stuff works, the security stuff. And they kind of tick that box. And then they go, well, what else can we do? Could we start to do some tech support? What about some software development or integration of our CRM with our ERP product? Those sorts of things. So we find customers grow by either capacity, where they've got two accountants and they want to add two more accountants, or alternatively, they grow by capability. I've got four accountants, now I want to add three tech support guys or a digital person or those sorts of things. So you find that our customers grow, but what it results in is that, we have a very broad base of customers from a whole lot of industries, and they're doing with a broad range of roles that they're doing inside it. So we really see ourselves as more of this sort of global platform for engagement of workers, either cloud, more so than a BPO with a specific vertical market focus.
And I don't want to estrange any listeners that are, you know, maybe a little bit timid about starting outsourcing. You know, how do people engage if, because it sort of can be a little bit intimidating if we talk about rocket scientists and the most advanced technologies, but how do you find, you know, if people are interested in outsourcing, what do you find the typical engagement process is so that they're not overwhelmed and so that they're not disappointed when they start?
Absolutely. You've got to start with the low hanging fruit. You've got to have a piece, you've got to choose something which is going to be successful. Some people come along and say, oh, I'd like to get a virtual assistant, you know, and they can manage my diary and send flowers to the wife and book the kids' concerts, all that sort of stuff. And you know what? That's one of the hardest roles to perform. You know, it takes years and years to train a great PA. And so people go through and they choose a role which is difficult, it's abstract, it takes years to get those sort of skills. There's a lot of soft skills associated with that as well. So if you're starting off, choose something which is going to be successful, you know, and whether that's a process like accounting or some sort of back office admin work, those sorts of things. And then once you've got that up and running, then you can very quickly start to say, well, let's now add that next component. And if you are going to go through and choose something like virtual assistants, don't choose one. Put a team together. Have them support a group of executives, because you've got to make sure that there is no single point of failure in those teams where you are managing these abstract concepts.
I refer to it myself a little bit like co-parenting. Where do you see the divide between you, the supplier, helping in terms of output, in terms of deliverables, in terms of work and work quality, versus the client being responsible for the deliverables and you really just providing the staffing? How does that sort of marriage work?
Absolutely. So we have we have three points of contact or three groups of people that support the customers. And the first one is the business development managers who are trying to find the right roles. You know, if you came along and said, you know, I'd like a .NET expert who's done this and got 20 years worth of experience, you know, sometimes, you know, the BDMs need to explain those roles really aren't available, and you need to define the roles slightly differently. You might need two people doing these tasks, etc., so that you have that scoping of the role. Then you have the operational aspects, which we call account management, scheduling holidays and understanding all the pay structures, etc. And the third team that we've added are called success pilots. And the success pilots have vertical domain industry knowledge around certain areas, whether it's real estate, MSP, or whether it's e-commerce. And so the success pilots know the sector. They're able to help with what are the metrics you should be measuring, and also, you know, what performance should a team be able to deliver and those sorts of things. So it's that three-team approach that we find is required to support the SMEs. And that's the other thing about our customers. You know, they're using different tools and they've got different processes, and you know, they want to do it their way because that's part of their secret sauce. You know, you can't go along and say, well, you need to drop everything you've been doing for the last 10 years and change and do it this way. That's very, very difficult, especially for small to medium enterprises.
And where do you see the relationship between effectively a consulting agency where people come to agencies for expertise and execution versus BPOs where it's more about the execution? You know, do you offer kind of agency services, advisory services, if it's like digital marketing, for example, or is it more just a staff augmentation?
No, absolutely. And that would be through our success pilot team who are really about trying to develop that domain knowledge and be able to sort of work with customers around, you know, what are your existing processes and how they need to be re-engineered. We also have a number of partnerships with consultants who are in country in the US and Australia who are able to go through, you know, work with customers with having a look at these existing processes. You know, one of the key learnings also is if a process is broken onshore, moving it offshore isn't going to fix it. It's just going to amplify the problem. So, you know, there's a combination of either onshore and offshore skills and expertise that we can assist with customers. And we're always looking for people that have that expertise in fields, and we're onshore, and we're keen to work with them.
And so you've raised a lot of money, and, you know, obviously that's with a view to expanding. Just first, initially, where do you see the future of outsourcing in 10 to 20 years from now? It's, you know, what is the big picture that everyone should be looking toward?
It's the amount of value that you deliver for the customers from each of the steps of the processes that, you know, the team are working on. And I think, you know, one of the things that we need to be doing is continuing to move up the food chain with our staff and the skills they have. You know, people sometimes say, oh, you know, why do you need an assistant or a personal assistant? Why can't you just use Alexa? And I said, well, look, you know, my personal assistant has Alexa, and she uses it all the time. So, you know, it's a matter of keeping making sure that we keep the skills that the staff have, and we keep moving those up the food chain. I said, especially with small to medium enterprises, the difference with a larger outsourcing, you know, global e-commerce company or something like that, you know, they want a room of, you know, 50 people, and those 50 people are all doing one thing. In the SMB land, it's, you know, I want one person doing 50 things. So, you know, it's a different skill set.
And are you finding, you know, compared to when you started sort of 10, 15 years ago, are you finding that the scope of roles are ever increasing as technology increases? You know, before, maybe 60% of jobs in the business could have been offshored, whereas now you're looking at 90, and eventually it would be 99 as everything moves more into, you know, the digital space. Are there many roles that you come across where, you know, you think that this really needs to be onshore?
No, look, it continues to surprise me, the number of roles which are kind of continuing to move into this offshore model. And I think, again, you know, with the work from home model, you know, businesses have had to go through and bring forward their digitization plans, which only opens up the opportunities for us more and more. I think, though, you know, one of the things that we do need to remind ourselves is that, you know, the onshore skills, you know, the value, being able to, you know, have those people focused on, you know, dealing with the customer and adding value to this whole process is really key. And I think that's one of the hardest processes to actually replace, is that personalized sort of, you know, get in front of the customer sort of tasks that sometimes businesses aren't doing all that well, and which are hard to do remotely.
It's funny, isn't it? Sometimes the simplest things, you know, you can find a rocket scientist, but then sometimes the simplest things, you know, even customer service and just sort of cultural familiarity, they are the hardest things to crack, and certainly the hardest things to scale, aren't they? Do you think, you know, eventually those things will be either mitigated or resolved, or will there always be a difficulty in terms of some aspects of scaling and outsourcing?
Look, there's also the cultural aspect as well, which is always difficult. It's, you know, what is the you know, how do you communicate, you know, this process with the team and make sure everyone's on the same page. I think, you know, there's always going to be challenges, and especially in the field where we start dealing with more and more automation of the tasks. You know, what are the roles going to be there? So, you know, one of the goals that we have at CloudStaff is, as customers move the processes over, you know, we have a series of people who do work in the process automation field, and you know, we want to be the ones that are automating the tasks, not the ones who are being replaced by the automation.
And so, what is the future like for CloudStaff then? You know, where are you looking to expand, and are you now looking for big clients like Facebook and Uber, or are you staying sort of true to your SMB roots?
I'm certainly not looking at Facebook and Uber or all those sort of guys. They're not our cup of tea. You know, we still very, very clearly in the land of SMB. You know, the funds that we receive from Navigar are really about growth capital, and it's about continuing to develop our technology platform and expand that. You know, it's a never-ending game. You're always evolving. You're always making improvements. You're always adding new functionality to it, and you just can't stop, because as soon as you lose that innovation, you're dead in the water. The second part is that you know, we do need to do more market education. So you know, we're starting to roll out educational campaigns into the US, Australia, and the UK. And the third part is potentially us expanding our footprint. So at the moment, most of the staff who are performing the tasks are based in the Philippines. You know, we could potentially look at establishing footprints in the US or India or Australia and the UK as well.
In my mind, you know, if you break everything apart and go down to the fundamentals, I see outsourcing really as the facilitation of globalized employment. It's really just taking care of the friction of being able to source globally and take advantage of you know, resource availability and, of course, prices as well. Where do you see the future of the market going in 50 years when we are a sort of globalized community by default?
Absolutely. I think it comes back to this, the comment I made early on, that businesses are going to get smaller and smaller, and we'll just be augmenting it with processes run by other businesses. And so I think that more and more, you know, the role of BPOs and offshoring companies is going to be, you know, continuing to reduce the hassle, the friction of engaging these staff, so the businesses can focus on getting on with business.
And it always amazes me that, you know, there's probably 95, 99% penetration of outsourcing in the multinationals, in the big enterprise, yet there's only about 0.5% penetration of outsourcing into the SMBs. What do you think is stopping them? Is it awareness, education? Is it concern or fear about offshoring? Where do you see the sticking point there?
Look, I really think that a big sticking point has been the technology. It's been the fact that they had everything on premise. It was very difficult to get access to it from people that weren't inside the office. And, you know, with the cloud, with work from home, with coronavirus, that's all changing dramatically. So that's been a big, I said, that one of the big changes in cloud staff's experience. I think the other challenges are really around that cultural aspect. You know, this is really about our growth strategy and how we're going to grow the business. And, you know, it means that we're going to take the staff that we do have and focus on improving their skills and the value that they're providing with the customers. And, you know, we very rarely see customers go through and get rid of a whole pile of people when they build the offshore team, because, you know, they're already under-resourced. They already don't have enough staff doing the right tasks. So, you know, when they start to build their offshore capability, you know, it's really about, you know, freeing up the time of those staff so they can focus on delivering value for the customers. And I think everyone inside the business all has to think about what is the value that I'm delivering for the business. And, you know, if you want to sit behind your desk and sit there and you know, just twiddle the pencil, I think those days are gone. And so no matter, you know, where you are or what side of the fence you're sitting on, it's everyone is going to have to think about, you know, what is the value that they're adding.
And for people, you know, I'm trying to get everyone to really consider this and take the first step if they haven't already. But what is the first step, and maybe what should they ask? How do you get people over that starting line to get it started?
Look, I think that everyone has to start by you know, sitting there and having some conversations, listening to some of the stories, be able to sort of get that sort of experience as to what has worked and also what hasn't worked. You know, that's just as important. And then again, choose a process which is you know, going to be that low hanging fruit. Get that up and operational, and then as you learn that. As you learn the issues associated with it, as you sort of overcome the challenges, then all of a sudden you can start to put that to use and expand it in other areas of the business. But I think the first key aspect is, you know, start to talk to some people, start to form some you know, conversations with inside your organization about, you know, what would happen if we did have a team to be able to support us. How could this use to unlock value inside the business? So those sorts of things, that facilitation of those sort of discussions is really important. You just can't go through and dump this on a team overnight. You know, you do need to sit there and try to, you know, obviously it's key to get their buy-in, and it's also key to give them the skills that they need to use when they're going to be working with teams that aren't all sitting in the office.
Outsourcing is a huge umbrella term, and within it, there's a lot of different business models and pricing models. Can you give insight into, you know, how you structure your pricing? Is it all wrapped in costs, or you know, kind of a seat leasing? How do you place yourself in pricing?
Well, according to my board, it's never enough. We're really about CloudStaff sees itself, I guess, as a bit of a high volume, low margin business. You know, we do try to get customers involved in owning the process that's actually being performed and those sorts of things, and so we try to give them the ability to sort of grow and scale that. I think it really comes down to, you know, what's that quantum of the value which is being provided by the process that really defines, you know, how much you can charge the customers. So I think that's it is difficult to put an exact figure on how you do that, but you know, when you're adding more value to the customers are happy to pay. And you know, it's when there's that lack of value or the lack of perceived value that people start to go through and say, well, look, you know, am I really getting all the bang that I'm paying for here?
Lloyd, it's been great to talk to you, and congratulations on your future growth trajectory. If anyone wants to learn more about CloudStaff, or you know, get in touch with you, how can they do that?
Just look, drop us an email to hello@cloudstaff.com, and you know, we'll the team will get back to you within straight away.
That was Lloyd Ernst of CloudStaff Modern Workforce. If you want any of the show notes, go to outsourceaccelerator.com/podcast. And as always, if you want to send us an email, then just email us at ask@outsourceaccelerator.com. See you next time.